Say when. Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. I'm Brent Henderson. I'm here with Kevin Huff.
Hoorah!
And we are so glad you're here. Remember, Kevin, what are we?
The Resistance.
The Resistance.
We are les Resistance.
I don't think that's how we want to say that on this podcast.
We're recording today from Paris, France. You know, we did watch a movie the other night. My wife, I was like, what kind of thing you want? Football was on, you know, with Thanksgiving, all this stuff. It was kind of a, it was like the number two movie in the nation. I can't remember what it was called, but it was some woman who went to France. She worked for some champagne company, and she ends up meeting the owner's son that doesn't know it's the owner's son, and they fall in love. And, of course, it's another one of those movies that's done in France where you have she leaves. She's going to go back to the U.S., and he drives across the country as fast as he can and meets her before she can get on the plane. And there you go.
Mes amis.
It was good. I think if I was a woman, I'd have very much enjoyed it. I'm glad that my wife enjoyed it. It was okay. It was all right.
Yeah. Well, my wife was flipping through channels the other day, or, you know, like looking for something to watch, and I was, and it was all like Christmas images, and I was like, do not tell me you're getting a Hallmark movie. I can't handle those. It's the same two actors that fall in love every time. It's amazing.
Right.
I'm like, I wonder what's going to happen in this one.
We did watch a movie two nights ago. It's a quote-unquote Christian movie, I believe. It did have like a Lauren Daigle song. I know I Will Send an Army song at the very end. This is kind of neat. I wish I could remember the name of this thing right now, but it's the woman who was abused as a child. She actually becomes a prostitute. And it's like done in the Old West, like in the 1800s. And this God tells this man to go to this town, and he's going to find this woman. He's going to make his wife. And when he kind of gets there and finds out who it is, he's like, well, God, you got a sense of humor here, don't you? But he never, ever veers off course. But it's really amazing because there are so many people that are standing in line, right, for this woman, basically, yeah, who want to confront her on her sin.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting? They're there to do what they shouldn't be doing, but they want to condemn her for who she is,
right,
in that moment, right?
I feel like I've seen that in the Bible somewhere.
I know.
That's, I feel like it was this a group of guys in a circle.
You're right.
Around a woman.
Does sound very familiar.
Speaking of lining up.
Drawing on the ground.
Yeah.
You had an interesting thing last week. You had pickleball
tournament. I'm going to jump in on you and do something different here.
Okay.
Fellas, thanks for reaching out to Brent last week and telling him that that podcast was helpful to you.
Oh.
I know I wasn't on, and Brent didn't say anything. I'm a little disappointed in him right now, so I'm just going to bring it up. No, the truth of the matter is, and this actually is something I want to address at some point anyway. He usually says, take a moment to like this pod, to share it, send it to a friend or someone you know that could really use some encouragement right now. If you want to support this ministry, helping us reach men with truth, identity, and purpose, go ahead and head to unleashed.men, I should be very clear, /about/donate. Partner with us there. But I want to tell you, this is Brent's ministry and has been Brent's ministry for a long time. I am a partner of his, but the funding goes to support Brent and the work that he does. I am otherwise employed. And I just wanted to make sure that that was clear, Brent, because I think people want to support us, but you. And I just want them to know. I think full transparency is always important.
And yeah, so, I didn't know you were going there.
Yeah, of course not.
You're a dog.
What can I say?
I don't like talking about this. I know I've had to put it in. It's like, hey, guys, you can, but yeah, thank you.
And so I should also add that there will be plenty of podcasts in the near future, especially where Brent is on his own. He already knows how to do that, so we're in a good spot.
He's done. I did like the first 200 of them.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be traveling a lot. Yeah, I mean, but I'm traveling, and so I just thought I would tell the guys that, you know, they don't get my extra twisted humor.
That laughs. I'll bet you can do a good Tigger.
I don't even think I want to try. That's good enough for me right there.
Well, I was heading in this thing was, you know, after talking about that movie and confronting people on things, you had a pickleball tournament that you had put on.
Well,
and how many people showed up for this thing to play?
Well, we had, so there's two numbers you always look at, 537 registrants. So that's how many people attempted to play. Mm-hmm. But then you get injuries early, so withdrawals before the tournament begins. You get people on a wait list because the other events are full. 485 still played.
Wow, still almost 500.
It's people. Almost 10% every time that you lose off that top number. But, folks, it's the biggest tournament I've run. And it was absolutely awesome. And it came before a crazy Thanksgiving. And just sort of three stories I want to share real quick. So at the tournament, it's Friday night. Friday night is singles night. Not the way you think it is.
Oh, yes, it's singles.
Friday night is singles night, meaning singles pickleball is being played, which is for the crazy gene people, the ones that have the crazy gene somewhere in their head. I don't know where it's at. I don't have the crazy gene that says go play singles. Anyway, I get a radio call. I'm in my sort of my war room. I get a radio call that some guy's having chest pains on court number whatever. So I run to the front, get 911 called, then run to the court because he's already got people with him. They've already got a doctor over there. They've got several other people, a nurse, and several people that are just kind of attending to him. He, fellas, like us, is just one stubborn son of a gun. When I get to him, he's standing up against the fence, just kind of leaning over it, having it support him a bit, and he is in pain. But he's refusing service from the 911 people. Now, they're not there yet. Once you call them, they're going to come.
Yeah.
The person has to refuse service when they get there. They can't tell us. We can't call off. Hey, never mind. Quit sending the ambulance. So I knew the ambulance was coming. That's good news. Front desk stayed on the phone with them. I go to see him. He's in pain, obvious pain. And I go, hey, listen, I believe you need to withdraw from the tournament. No, I'm not. I'm not going to withdraw from the tournament. I go, well, it's not only your call, it's mine also. So you're out. I said, and he, there was zero argument. He was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just help him save his man card, I guess, is all I was doing on that
right,
part.
Right.
But it ended up being a full-on heart attack. Took him to the hospital 5 stints later.
Wow.
And for 5 days in the hospital, he got home on Wednesday. Holding his name back and some of the other names back just because I didn't get any permission to share his personal story, but it happened at a tournament that I was at, and most of you weren't at that tournament. So I'm
Did you talk to him at all after this?
He sent me a really kind thank you for saving my life email.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, because of you and several other people like you, he's like, I'll be able to play pickleball for years to come. And he's right, because he was in trouble. Throwing up, back pain.
Oh, yeah. His
holdup was, but I don't have the radiating pain down my right arm, left right. arm. What is it? The right arm, whichever arm it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you avoided
it.
I
didn't have that.
Yeah, and we were like, dude, that's just a symptom. You have 9 other ones.
Right.
So let's recognize what's happening here. So praise the Lord, he's okay and able to talk about his story and live another day.
You know, you were talking about when you call them, like 911 or the police, wherever, they have to come, they have to respond.
Right.
When our youngest was, I don't know how old she was probably maybe 8, 7. There was another little boy, same age she was, at the house. Well, you know how, like, when you were young, before we had cell phones and they could track your call, yes. You would get on and you'd call and say, hey, do you have Jenny in a can? You better let her out, saying all these, do you have
refrigerator running?
Right, you better go catch it. And they wouldn't know who was doing this stuff. Well, now they know, right? So this little boy that was visiting at the house, he calls 911. And says, help, there's a dog in the house, and it's attacking me, it's biting me. Well, they're going to respond.
Yes.
And they know from the phone number where to go. We didn't even know they had done this. They're upstairs, kind of laughing. And next thing you know, I see police units, quickly pulling in, nose to nose, and bumper to bumper. They're running up, and here comes this canine truck behind it, and these guys are coming. I'm like, what is going on? And we get this knock on the door, and he said, I need to know if everyone's okay. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, we have a report that there is a vicious dog attacking a little boy in this house. I said, you must have the wrong house.
Next door?
Yeah, I know. He says, nope, this is the address. Do you have a little boy here or something? And I said, well, there is one visiting. And I look around the corner. I see them peeking around the corner like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And I said, the only dog we have here is a mini golden doodle. And she loves everybody.
Yeah.
Well, this was a big dog, he said, and it was attacking him and hurting him. And we went around the corner and said, did you guys call the police? and they both looked at each other. So I went outside, shut the door with the police officer.
Oh, I know where this is going.
And I said, I want you to do me a favor.
Yeah, that's what I would have said too. Have a little talk.
Yeah, we're going to have a little talk with Jesus. Yes. Makes it right.
You have the right to remain silent.
And I said, I want you to come in and I want you to let them know the problems this could create. Because I said, you know, you're driving here very fast if someone's being hurt.
Yeah.
The expense on the hour with all the different trucks, the people, the paramedics, everything that was coming to this thing. And he comes in, man, and they sit down, and the couch was oversized anyhow, like a big couch of little kids, and he just reads them the riot act.
Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
I love it.
It was awesome. It was awesome. But where I wanted to go with this whole thing today is really about confrontation. Mm. When is it okay? Like, you had to go to this guy and say, no, you're showing all the symptoms of this. So we look at the physical realm. And we can see that, and we go, I don't have to be in relationship with you to see that I care about a fellow human being to call 911 because your heart is messed up.
That's right.
Don't want you to die on my watch. But now take it over to the spiritual realm. Look, now what I'm doing is I'm talking about believers. Now, believers confronting other believers or a believer confronting an unbeliever. Are they both okay? Are they not? How do we handle that? What does the Bible say about that? That's kind of where I wanted to go because... Let me read this. I had a post that I made on Facebook yesterday, and this was when I was working on the podcast. And here's what I wrote. If you're more interested in seeing sinners punished than restored, you've forgotten that the only people who demanded a crucifixion were the ones standing furthest from the truth. So, if restoration isn't your goal, then confrontation isn't your calling. I have heard so many people in so many conversations just start, was it John Maxwell called these garbage dump people? They have all this gossip, and they're dumping it on you. And if you receive it and get involved, you're also the garbage dump, right? Yeah. You're receiving all this. And here's the thing is, if you're not a part of the solution, then you have become a part of the problem.
Well, if you've ever been to a garbage dump, they're not the ones dumping the garbage, but it sure smells there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's right.
So if you take it in, you're still taking it in.
And when you go to the dump, everybody's lined up bringing their stuff and dumping it. Oh,
isn't it interesting that the word is you could refuse to take it in, which is also the word like spelled refuse? Just hit me. Whatever. Not trying to be punny, just hit me. I'll tell you, I had another confrontation this last week, this time with a police officer.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I don't like the feeling of being trapped. I don't enjoy it at all. And I got trapped on Thanksgiving morning inside of a turkey trot bubble for which there was zero exit for me in my vehicle. So I'm having a lovely conversation with the police officer about, how can you just hold me here against my will? I told him, I'm like, look, I love cops. I'm a fan. I got family that's like, I support you guys, but there's got to be a way out of this. He's like, zero. Turn around. Sit here in the parking lot.
What you said,
1 hour.
Define something first. A turkey trot.
Yeah, this is what crazy nut people do before they go eat turkey for lunch. They go out and they run for like a 5K or a 10K. It's a turkey trot.
Okay, I never heard of that.
Oh, I mean, whatever. I mean, it's got a million names. So Thanksgiving 5K. I don't.
Yeah. Okay.
And it happens to be called the turkey trot over there. And it's for a good organization. But for 60 minutes, my wife and I had to sit in a parking lot at the stop sign waiting to get to the parking lot. Because we couldn't even go back to the hotel, which was 1.5 blocks behind us.
And the reason was?
Because it was all bubbled off for this race that was on the public streets.
So you're stuck for an hour.
Hour.
Ugh.
I mean, he was a cool guy. He was like, just look, I can't help you. He goes, it's not sanctioned by the police. It's a private event. The city approves it through paperwork, and we come out here and we manage it. And I was like, I get it, but gosh, dang it, 1 hour. I go, I can't get to my family's. Like, I can't get to my family's. Like, I'm supposed to be cooking a lunch. Right. And he's like, and this is the only thing he said that really annoyed me. He goes, well, where's that at? And I'm like, well, it's not inside the bubble. I go, Brentwood? He goes, yeah, you can't go there. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's not inside the bubble. He's showing me his map on his iPhone and how I'm stuck in this circle. So anyway.
Yeah, so those are difficult. Like, even
testing my patience.
I mean, I've been pulled over one time. My buddy Wade and I were in Alaska, and a policeman pulled us over. We were doing 25. He said we were doing 60.
Oh, goodness.
I said, no, we were slow. We were looking at the GPS. We're going, which one of these buildings are we supposed to be going in? Well, I clocked you at 60. I said, we just got off the ramp, and we were going slow trying to figure out where this place was. And at that moment, you know, it's like, how do you confront someone? No, that is not true.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I've had times in my life where I have said some things that were not true, and someone confronted me on them.
Yeah, that's good.
And I knew they weren't true.
That's good stuff.
And, you know, what usually happens is if someone really kind of goes after you with something, you can kind of tell when someone's guilty or not if they get really defensive. That's usually sort a pretty big warning sign.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
If there's no reason to have to really get, you know, big and defensive unless there's some truth to what they are saying.
And that's maybe where we see a reflection of or the outcome of that scripture. It's in Matthew and in Luke. Why do you see the speck in your brother's eye but not notice the log in your own?
Yeah.
You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye and then you can see to remove the speck in your brother's eye.
Yeah. In that movie that I was talking about with that one woman who was a prostitute, there's one man who gives her a ride into town, but he demands sex from her. And he claimed to be a good man, Christian man, all this stuff.
Right.
And when he gets to the town, he says, "Get off. I don't want anyone to see me with you." But he's giving her a ride to town. But after what he just demanded for the ride, and she just kind of looks at him, you know, and she confronts him. She goes, "You know, you say you're this man and all that, but I know you. I know what just happened." And that ends up changing his life later on in the movie. He really does get his life back together. And it was that thing when someone lovingly confronted him. I want to be careful because I think it's important as believers, the way that we approach someone, loving doesn't mean that it's always going to be necessarily soft-spoken or kind. Because sometimes the loving thing to do is saying, "Hey, we are in relationship. This is something we both believe in. I am a part of what's going on here. I see what's going on here. This is not okay."
Agree. You know, it's interesting because sometimes the kindest thing to do is to spank your child.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an example of that same thing.
Well, it's consequences. Why does God give us consequences when we step out of line? Because he loves us. He doesn't want us to have a snowball go downhill and get bigger and bigger. So I think there's real importance in thinking about, you know, confronting people. But I've seen people on Facebook, too, that just throw out confrontation. And I just want to come back and say, listen, if you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem.
Right.
Because what you're doing right now is gossiping.
Right.
This is interesting. I was on a plane. This has been probably 12 years ago. I was flying to California. It was my birthday. It was kind of funny. And I get on in Indianapolis, and it's like a four-hour flight to get to L.A. or wherever I was going. And on the one side of me, there was this one woman. She's up against the window. And she was a religious person, I'll say that. And you could tell by the way she was dressed and everything she had. And she's sniffling. She's kind of, you know, blowing her nose, and she keeps crying. And I'm wanting to go to sleep, right? And I think I've shared this story before, but it's been a long time. And so as the woman is sitting there, I finally just kind of said, as she keeps crying, I said, "Are you okay, Mr. Empathy here?" And she looks at me, and she shakes her head no. And I said, "Do you want to talk about it?" She said, "It's just been a really rough, rough day." And I said, "Well, what's going on?" She said, "We had to let someone go from our church today." I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I said, "Was it like someone in leadership or on staff?" She goes, "No, it was actually one of my best friends." And I said, "So she had to leave the church?" She says, "Yeah, there was a sin in her life that she wasn't willing to give up." And she goes, "It was a last resort." She goes, "You know, the Bible in Matthew 18, it says, you go to them, then you take a witness if they still, you know, haven't repented or changed. And then you take it before the leadership, the church."
Yep.
And then at that point, the next verse says, at that point, you treat them like a pagan and tax collector. I said, "What do you think that means?" And she goes, "Well, I was always taught that it means you shake the dust off your feet and you have nothing to do with them."
Yeah, you shun them. It's like anathema.
Yeah. And I don't know anyone, truly, who's been changed by guilting, shaming, shunning, or judging. I don't know anybody who's been changed by that. So finally, I just said, treat him like a pagan and tax collector. I said, "You know, what does that mean?" She goes, "Well, you shake the dust off your feet." And I said, "Where is that verse found?"
Yeah.
She goes, "Well, it's in Matthew." I said, "Oh." I said, "And what was Matthew?" She goes, "Well, he was a tax collector. And I said, "One thing." I said, "How did Jesus treat tax collectors?" And she began to cry again.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she said, "He loved them." What that verse isn't about is not about shunning, shaking the dust off your feet. It means you begin again. You begin the process again, as if like you're dealing with an unbeliever, someone that doesn't truly understand the gravity, because obviously the aha moment has not happened yet for them. And sometimes we think it's my job to create the aha moment, right? But when I say to guys, when I'm working with guys, I'll say, where does revelation come from? And they'll say, well, it comes from God. And I say, I agree. And when does God give them that revelation? When they are ready to hear it. Because you can't know something until you know it.
That's right.
It might be obvious to you and me. But whatever their story is, whatever, maybe what lie they're believing in, because they don't want to look at something closely, they go into denial. They're like, this can't be true. I can't be doing this. You're just, but when we can approach someone lovingly, meaning we have relationship with them and say, I care about you. I don't want to see you or others get hurt. Can we talk about this?
And they're not coming to you to keep or put themselves on a pedestal above you.
Yeah.
It can't be that defensive or deflective. It has to be a genuine, like, I have your back. I care about you.
Yes.
We've talked about my stuff. Let's talk about your stuff type, you know.
I used to do this when I would speak on Sunday mornings in churches. I still speak in Sunday mornings, but this was a couple years ago. I'd look at the people and I'd say, I want to ask you all a question. I want you to imagine that you all have an addiction. Now, here's the truth. You do. It just might not be as glaring as somebody else's or as, you know, publicly acceptable or whatever. So we all have it. You know, for some of us, it could be a hunting addiction. I mean, you know, it could be a football sports addiction. It could be a food addiction. It could be an anger addiction. It could be pornography. It could be anything. But I would say to the crowd, I'd say, here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about, imagine that's you right now. But the next thing I want you to do is, what could someone say or do that would not help you get through your addiction? And I mean, people would instantly, you know, they start saying things like, God is so disappointed in you right now. You know, do you know how much, you know, you hurt this person or that person or how much you're hurting others? You should be ashamed of yourself. You know, you've broken the heart of God. You know, I've heard that one so many times, as if God's going to have to go on Prozac now. You can't, when you think of it that way, God doesn't have unhealthy emotions, right?
Right.
Or negative emotions. Now, there's a righteous anger, but we're not going to get into that. It's a totally different thing. Then I would say, okay, so those are the things that would not help you. None of that heals. You know, it just piles weight onto your already wounded soul. I said, now, what could someone say or do that would actually help you walk out of this addiction? And you can feel it. You can see the people. Before, they didn't want to volunteer. They're not quite sure what to say. And now, hands are raising up, you know, saying things like, just tell me you love me. You know, tell me that you aren't going to leave me. Remind me that God still loves me. You know, help me remember who I am in Christ. That, yeah, I know you did that sin, but it doesn't change your identity. God still loves you. God still forgives you. Ask how you can help. I had a guy show up at my door one day that had been through a divorce, and he was, because of the shame, he had walked away from all of his friends. Got into another relationship, very unhealthy relationship, and it lasted for a year or two. And this person disappeared from my life. And I thought, wow, because of that, the shame, they're gone from my life. I wasn't mean. I tried to stay in this person's life. And then there was a knock on my door. You got time to go for a ride. And we went for the next couple of hours, went to a Subway, I think it was, and just sat, because he knew that I wasn't going to shame him. I was going to listen to the pain he was going through. The pain that caused the divorce was real. The pain of the new relationship that he got into was real, because it drove him somewhere trying to find his identity. And that's the thing, is we always have to be leading people back to who they really are in Christ, because when shame gets its foot in the door, you're going to act out, because you're trying to find a way to make yourself feel better for the moment. And shame just causes you to go into hiding, and it's a wash, rinse, repeat. You will go into hiding, you'll act out more, trying to find your way out, trying to find something that feels good for the moment, only to this shame just, it just piles on. So yeah, I think it's really important that we have relationship with the person that we're going to be, you know, and I say that, yeah, confronting, loving them well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But no one ever, you know, said the words, you know, hey, your shame is going to help you heal.
Right.
Not once.
Right. Yeah, or, you know, back to that stuff about, like, disappointing the father or whatever, breaking his heart. I mean, his heart longs for us. Longs for us. Like, we have no idea how it longs for us. Yeah, identity, you know, we talk about it just about every podcast, I think, but it's so important. It's what hangs us up when we're not in line or not going down the path we should be going down, and it's what keeps us in line when we understand where we're supposed to go. Identity. It's incredibly important to us. Back to the guy with the heart attack. His identity was, I'm a tough guy. Looked like you, Brent. Great physical shape. 58-year-old dude. Like, solid. Can't be happening to him. That's not his identity. His identity is not a guy who's going to have a heart attack today.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pride.
Sure. Yeah, that's where that comes from. It's definitely rooted in pride. So
I'll never forget the night that I knew something was wrong with my heart. I had little warning signs, but I went and sat on the edge of the bed. I was like, getting ready to go to bed, and it lasted for an hour. Usually it would last for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, and I was in denial. No, this can't be happening to me. I've got, you know, athletic sponsorships, right?
Yeah.
They send me product. You know, I do all this stuff, and it's like, Brent, you're going to have to swallow all that because this is a real deal. It's a genetic thing, and if you don't get this taken care of, I went to bed that night thinking I don't want to get anybody out of bed.
Right.
Because we're going to go to the emergency
room. Right. And they're going to say it's GERD or whatever.
Yeah. Here, take a Tums.
Yeah.
Right? But it was real.
Did they ever say to you that those were mild heart attacks?
No. He said, you know, luckily you haven't had a heart attack yet. What okay. It was, you know, all those arteries and stuff. And when you get the blockage, so for a lot of you guys listening, listen to this. This is really important because a lot of you guys, I'm just going to say it, you don't want to admit that there could be something going on with your heart. You had the chest pains. Or you've had family members who have had this. It can be genetic. I was eating pretty good. I was exercising a lot. But what happens is your arteries, when you're born, you have zero plaque in your arteries. And some people can be 50 years old and have no plaque. It's just, you know, there's genetics and there's also diet. But for those of you, like with me, when you get plaque, the soft plaque can break off inside your arteries. It can cause a stroke, heart attack. But it calcifies, you know, it can get hard. And so what happens is, as that plaque calcifies and it builds on top of each other, the elasticity of those arteries that can, you know, bend and flow as it needs more blood, it can't do that anymore. And it begins to pinch off so that it can't get the blood it needs. And so you've got, you know, like the major arteries going around the heart. And so what happened in my case was, this is really interesting how God made this. You can have blockage, but your heart can form new pathways around those arteries, but they're not big enough to give you the flow you need, just enough to keep you going. And he's like, dude, he said, I really am surprised you walked in here. And when he showed me that, like, where everything had narrowed down, how crazy was that? But he confronted me. He said, if you do not do what I tell you to do, this is not going to end well for you. I was told, you cannot go on the hunt. I was told you have to have a heart cath. I was told you have to have an open heart surgery. That's another form of confrontation, because when you really care, like you did about that gentleman, when we really care about someone and we're in a relationship, that person, that cardiologist was in a position of authority over me. When I was in church, whether I was on pastoral staff or I was just the parishioner, someone's in authority there because I put myself in that place.
Right.
You are going to be my shepherd in this thing. Right? Help me walk through the unhealthy stuff right. That I'm buying into. But how we do that is so important, because a person, they have to know this. When a person's going through it, because biblical confrontation, it's not just, I'm calling them out. And it's not airing
their
failures.
There's a laundry list of everything you've done wrong. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's not airing their failures to everybody else, like around the dinner table or in front of the church, whatever it is.
Posting about them on Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Telling everyone about it.
But what biblical confrontation, you know, it's calling someone forward to take responsibility.
I like that language, forward.
Yeah, it's calling them forward. It's like, hey, dude, this doesn't change who you are. But the way that you handle this, it's going to help you. It's going to help you step up and understand who you are. Because when you have that kind of courage, knowing that you're already forgiven of the sins in your life, now take ownership, step up, take responsibility, and let's work on working through this. You know, it's really helping someone step into their struggle. And, you know, why is it we don't? Because we're afraid. What's people going to think of us if they, right? But if someone says, no matter what, I am sticking with you through this.
Yeah. You know, we ask the question, are we called to confront strangers? Now, there's people that we really don't have a strong relationship with. I think our natural inclination is to say no, because that relationship helps. But you made a comment earlier about being under someone else's authority. And there are times when, as an authority, you're under someone's authority. It's appropriate even without the relationship. So, for example, I head to, whatever, Texas next week, and I'm sitting down with a group from Comcast in Houston, and my job is to be their coach that week. And I meet Jerry for the first time. But Jerry's doing something that's detrimental to him and his business. Well, I don't have that relationship with him in terms of, like, friendly, or I have your back, or buddy-buddy, but I have that relationship with him as a coach. Right. So I have a it's probably better to say I have a responsibility to him as a coach.
Yeah.
So I think there's circumstances where the relationship needs to be in place so that they know you love them. And then there are places where the responsibility needs to be in place to know that they have your back, because that's their role, their job.
Yeah. Do you remember that thing I created called Guide?
Oh, yeah.
Even just without going through the whole thing, just the first three, G-U-I in the word guide, an acronym. So G is get the truth. I think this is important in any situation, whether you want to call it confronting or you're just trying to walk with someone, get the truth, what they see to be true, not what you see to be true. Get it from them so you can hear what they are saying. Because it may be 5% true, it could be 100% true, but you have to get the truth. You is understand before being understood.
Right.
If that person realizes you're trying to get into their world, you know, you're using empathy, you're trying to see where they're coming from, they're much more likely to see it as a safe place, and now they will open up to you. I, in guide, is inquiry. It's asking questions. But when you do this, you have to do it without an agenda. Because if my agenda is to go, well, I see that problem, and I've got an agenda to get you fixed, they might not see that as a welcoming, safe environment yet.
Right. Or because it makes you look good because you don't have that issue.
Yes.
Or, like, that's that stuff we kind of talked about before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the D, discuss my feelings. That's always a hard one.
Yeah. I was, you know, with that, you just come back and saying, you know, once I've done those, and again, repeating and rephrasing what that person is saying, because when you do that, when you say, hey, help me understand, can you repeat what you said, and can you rephrase it a different way? Because then when you say, here's what I'm hearing you say, I'm repeating what you said, and they go, no, that's not what I was saying. Oh, well, then rephrase it. Right. Because they're going, oh, that's how I said it? I didn't mean to say it like that. Here's what it...
Yeah, because my heart for you is this. My heart for you is that you'd have all the best, that you would, you know, thrive, that you would, you know, whatever the situation is. Yeah.
And then the D of guide is, you know, now I can discuss my feelings. Well, here's how I am feeling about this.
And then we can encourage them.
And then he is, and I can bring back to encouragement. Yep.
Absolutely.
So glad to have this time talking with you together, man. We're going to work through this and all that good stuff. Yeah.
Good stuff, Brent. Really good stuff. Let's see. What else we should... We said we're called to confront strangers, but that typically lies under responsibility. We're called to confront believers we walk with. That typically falls under a relationship.
You know, I think might be important is we all know John 3:16. For God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten son. You go back to John 3:17. This one's really important. It says, for God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. We are so quick to condemn someone. Confrontation in the kingdom, it's never about condemnation. It's about rescue. If Jesus didn't come to shame sinners, but to restore them, then we have to think about this. Then our approach to hard conversations, it's got to look the same. Because truth spoken without love, it crushes the spirit. Truth wrapped in love brings healing. So every time that we step forward towards someone, you know, in the struggle, the goal isn't to try to prove how right we are. It's to try and help them remember how loved they are. And that calling them back to who God already says they are is the most important thing we can do. That's restoration.
It's kind of also indemnification. It just kind of hit me just now. It's not condemnation, it's indemnification, right? It's that whole, I'm fully protected against what I deserve. It's grace and mercy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, if you knew that there was nothing that you could say or do that can make God love you less, and there's nothing you could do or say that can make God love you more, how would that change your life? How would that change the sin in your life? How would that change your ability to come to the Father and be honest, or anybody, to be a truth teller? Because if there's something that I need to, confession is an awesome thing, but if I'm afraid of what you're going to think about me or what God's going to think about me, I'm going back into hiding again. But if I knew that there's nothing I can do or say that can make God love me more, or nothing he can do or say make him love me less, I can be free. I can let go of this stuff. That's powerful.
It really is. It really is.
Well, anything else you can...
I think maybe one last thing, and this goes back to the guy that had the heart attack, and I didn't really know him. I mean, I knew his name. He was in my tournament, but I didn't really know him. I will say this, man, we are so freaking stubborn, and we're not often coachable. And yet coachability is one of the top attributes we see in people who are successful in the things that they're endeavoring to do. Be coachable, guys. Be coachable. By the way, that's one finger pointing at them and four back at me. Like, be coachable, Kev.
When I was hired for this one position in a church years ago, one of the things they said to me was, are you teachable?
Yeah.
Which is that, are you teachable?
Do you know there's a difference there? So teachable means you can learn. Coachable means you're willing to apply it.
Yeah, good point.
Because coachability is an attitude, whereas teachability is just an aptitude.
So we're coming back from Indianapolis. We had a dinner date with a couple of couples last night. And we are getting between the first or the middle Anderson exit and the bottom Anderson exit, south of Anderson. Traffic is backed up as far as you can see. You know, it's three lanes of traffic now. It's gone from two to three. And we have to pick up our youngest about 30 minutes away from work. We have to be there at 8 o'clock. And Stacy is like, I'm in the far left lane. I'm like, I'm going to stay out here to try to get around this mess. Because I didn't need that exit. I need two more exits down the road. And she's like, why don't you just get off here and let's take a back way. It'll take a little longer. And I'm on my GPS trying to get this. I'm frustrated.
Come on, Waze.
I want to, because it'll show you, right, how far the traffic is backed up.
You got Apple, Google, and Waze all open.
I got two of them, yeah.
Which one?
And so I'm looking at this, and she goes, well, mine doesn't tell me how far it's backed up. I said, well, mine will. And she goes, well, you maybe want to get over in this lane in case you want to get off this exit. Well, I wasn't very coachable in that moment. I'm on my GPS. I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. That's right. Why I have it. So we get into this discussion, and she's like, why can't you just listen to what I'm saying? It makes sense. We'll get off at this exit. We'll go to the bed. It's an extra 7-8 minutes. But then we don't have to worry about it. I'm like, well, I won't have to worry about it if I can figure it out on my GPS.
Yeah, I might still be able to save 30 seconds.
Yes. It was exactly right.
I'll make your 7 minutes 6.5.
And so as we were talking, we're both trying to, he said, well, this is why I said that, and that's why I said that. And she's like, I just need you to know that how that made me feel. Mm. Well, to a guy, we're kind of like, well, I'm sorry I made you feel that way.
You know, right.
You know, it's like, I was right. I'm not going to apologize. But the truth was, in the way that we handle things sometimes, she calmed down and she said, I just need you to hear the way it makes me feel. And by her being able to approach it like that and not coming after me, like, it calms me down to be able to go, you know what, I guess I wasn't really thinking about what your thoughts were. Mine was, I see a problem, I'm going to fix it. But that was just a mild way. I think within any marriage, we can have that kind of stuff sometimes. But I think it's so important that the way that we approach someone will really help dictate the way that that conversation or argument can go. If I come at it with empathy and love, It's not saying you don't tell the truth to what you see it being, but sometimes we jump the gun on how quickly I have to prove to you that I'm right, rather than hearing, help me understand why you see it that way. Mm. Well, anyhow, this is powerful stuff. And again, confronting someone out of love, it's a powerful thing, but how we do it can make all the difference in the world. Father God, thank you that you didn't confront us to condemn us. You confronted us to rescue us and help us to love like your son, the one that you sent. Help us to be brave enough to speak the truth, because when we're not, more people can be hurt. Gentle enough in those confrontations can actually restore hearts. So teach us how to walk, you know, with men instead of judging them. Instead of having to prove, like I just said, that we are right. You know, I pray that we would raise up a brotherhood that fights for restoration and not punishment, not condemnation. Teach us how to love well, that your glory would be shown. In Jesus' mighty name, Amen. Guys, if this episode, you know, helped you today in any way, share it with a brother, you know, share it with someone, you know, walking through something hard who needs to be reminded that they are not alone. And remember this, that when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he's no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous, dangerous for good, because he's been unleashed. We'll see you next time.